You're listening to Maneuvering Mondays, a podcast about transforming work culture.
This is the second part of the episode, and in this part, we have invited one or more guest experts to share their best advice to Marie from Zebra Apps. So your hosts today are AK
and Devana.
And for this commentary episode, we have invited one guest speaker to discuss the story part. Welcome to Heidi. Heidi, you have a background in the software industry, where you've worked as an interaction designer and a technical project manager. And today you coach and help teams and organizations build strong relationships together to build software. And then we're also really curious because you've written a book called Dynamic Reteaming. And I would really like to hear a bit more about that.
Sure. Yeah. I'd love to share about my book. So I've been in the software for 20 plus years in a variety of roles, as AK mentioned. And early in my career, I was at a startup and our teams changed quite frequently. And I noticed that a lot of the traditional wisdom in that I would read about team development, team effectiveness would really suggest that teams should remain the same or stable. But I had lived the opposite experience. So I dug into that topic, did research around the world, and interviewed a variety of colleagues and wrote the book Dynamic Reteaming, which talks about five patterns of how our teams change in tech organizations. And I wrote the second edition with O'Reilly. And this is what it looks like. And yeah, so there's a lot of stories of how teams change, how to get better at managing change in teams, coaching others through change, et cetera. So
that's really awesome and also very relevant to the discussion we'll be having today about the teams in Zebra Apps. Before we get into talking closer to the story, I want us to check in on the question of if you could share an experience or one event during your career that's kind of changed the whole trajectory of your career to what it is today.
Sure. You know, in thinking about this question, I think I've had multiple events that have changed the trajectory, but the most radical change was when I did a career change. So I am a former teacher of English as a second language at different U.S. universities. So I was teaching at University of California, Santa Barbara. I was teaching adults English. And we were studying new technologies, and I was combining web design with learning English. And I came across this technology, and I brought the article to my students, and we were reading, writing, and speaking about this screen sharing technology. And as I looked, it was called BuddyHelp. And as I looked in the article, I noticed that the company was in my town, which was Santa Barbara, California. And one day I sent an email to them that I'm blown away with your technology. It's screen sharing, just like we're using here, but previous technology. And so I sent an email to this company just like that on a whim. And it turns out they were looking for a writer. So they saw the strength in me as a writing teacher, and they needed a writer for their website. So I joined their company called Expert City, which was a startup. And then I became an interaction designer and UX and then technical project manager and so on. But we wound up inventing the products GoToMeeting and GoToWebinar. And it was just that one small email sending my interest, just cold, like a cold, what we call a cold email. And my whole career trajectory changed. They hired me in. I was the 15th employee. And then my career took off from there.
That was such an inspiring turn of events.
Thanks. Always send that email.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always send the email. And it's so funny because I remember the founder called me in response. One of the founders called me in response to the email, and I'm sitting in my laundry room taking this call. And I was just, I guess I wasn't expecting a response, or I didn't think about it that much because it was almost like, wow. And I was just so blown away by the fact that you could see and control someone's computer from a distance, which is what it was. And yeah, so
And now we cannot live without that technology for sure, I think, or at least in many companies, right?
Yeah, it's incredible.
Well, I also thought about this question today. And of course, like Heidi, there's a lot of different smaller events that led to where I am today. But I wanted to highlight one thing, which is that I think 5-6 years ago, I kind of randomly ended up in a facilitation course. And it was kind of a coincidence because one of my colleagues was supposed to go, but then she actually got a new job and she was like, do you want to take my spot? And I said, yeah, sure, that would be really cool. And it turned out to be like the most useful set of tools that I ever learned. I use it every single day. And I think it's just amazing how important facilitation is as an actual discipline. It's not just something that you, it's not easy. That's what I'm trying to say. So I think it was so valuable that I ended up in this class. And I think also in change management and when you work with teams and organizations in times of change, I think the role as a facilitator is really important alongside some of the other roles you can take. But I think helping facilitate the change is really powerful.
I couldn't agree more. That is a very important skill. I want to share an experience going from my first job out of university to my second job out of university, where in my first job, I stumbled upon the concept of, well, agile software development, because I was working for a technology company, and this is 15 years ago, and they were using Scrum as one of the first companies in Denmark. And for me, that was a big revolution. I was like, ooh, this is the way. And then I started in a new software company. They were not working with Scrum. They had already used Scrum, but they had moved beyond Agile. They were a holacratic organization. And I remember like realizing, wow, this new thing that I thought was the answer to everything, there's a newer thing. There's something beyond the boundaries of this framework that is already revolutionary. And for me, that kind of changed my trajectory in the sense that I realized, well, there's always something out there that addresses the shortcomings of the current system. There's always a new system. And just also that you cannot assume that what you know to be true and right today, that there's nothing beyond that. There's always something beyond. And I think that I apply this thinking in whatever I do is finding, well, what is the next evolution of the current system? How can we come closer to that in whatever we do?
Sounds like it broadened your horizons when you went beyond Scrum into this other way of working.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really mind-altering.
Mm. Very cool.
Well, I love that all our check-ins are early career realizations about, well, how else can we apply our skills? Well, let's shift gears a little bit and get a little bit closer to this story part of this week. And Heidi, I would be curious to hear a brief summary of what you've read, but also some of your reflections about reading this piece.
Yeah, in thinking of the summary, I really honed into the relationship between Marie, the head of development HR, and her boss, Mark, the VP of HR, as well as his boss, the CEO, Natalie. And seems that there's a lot going on, and Mark is not always included in some of the work that is going on by Marie. And, you know, in particular, it seems that Natalie and Marie are going around Mark and not including him in different initiatives. There's a lot of surprises that happen. And it just seems that that's creating different tension and conflict and drama that doesn't need to be there. And is so I really sort of honed in on that. Natalie asked Marie to head up a culture revitalization initiative because they're having retention problems in this company. And yeah, but really, Marie and Mark do not necessarily have a strong, aligned relationship. And I think towards the end of the chapter, Marie is realizing that maybe her thoughts of Mark and how she was judging him were incorrect. Maybe he's really not as bad as she's thinking he is. I think her thoughts of Mark are very adversarial and very much like dismissing of him. And yeah, so there's definitely something funky about Marie and Mark's relationship, the way that Natalie as a CEO is engaging with them or not engaging with Mark feels a bit dysfunctional.
Can I just have a quick comment, because it's funny. I really agree that this is really at the core of this chapter. And something I noted the first time I read the text, there's a place in the text where Marie says that she involved her entire team in planning the meeting, and Mark has a kind of a strong reaction to that. He looks like he doesn't think that was a good idea. And in the beginning, or first time I read it, I thought that maybe he thought it was a waste of time to use a lot of people's time on this. But then the second time I read it, I actually thought, is this because he was upset that she didn't involve him, but worked with her team instead? So I think you're right in that she's kind of ignoring him. And obviously, yeah, there's something going on there.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something going on there. And if we, you know, just think like organizationally, it's, you know, Mark as the senior leader, the VP, is, you know, his whole realm of responsibility is, of course, you know, Marie, her org, also, you know, Marie's peer, who's Paul, head of HR operations. Like, he's responsible for that whole entity, and Marie is like running with it and not involving him or including him. And she needs to be working with him and getting by and helping him be successful. They need to be working as a team, and that's not it doesn't appear to be happening.
Yeah, it also seems like she's dismissed him a long time ago, and that some of this dysfunction has been happening for a while.
Yeah, and I also was surprised that, you know, if you think of her behavior, there's another part in the text where she goes and she talks with a VP of HR that's at another company, Convo Systems, to get insight into another member of her executive team. And it feels a bit like she's playing games. It could be that she just doesn't know what to do. She doesn't know how to behave professionally. She could be quite a lot more junior than, you know, maybe her title appears, head of development HR. But there's a lot of interactions that are not quite healthy for her system, which is, you know, the Zebra Apps company.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting point also, because we have this dysfunctional organization of Zebra Apps, and we see that the CEO has tasked Marie with fixing the dysfunction by addressing it with a cultural program. But in fact, what also you're commenting on, Heidi, is that maybe Marie is part of the dysfunction itself.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely part of the system. And I think when reading the text, you know, I initially thought, oh, you know, she's like the heroine of the story and inherently knows exactly what to do. And but she's human, right, like the rest of us. And I think no one's perfect. And, you know, we operate as we think that we should, and we try to do the best that we can. And but, you know, she's definitely has some work to do to level up professionally.
And Heidi, while you were reading this, did you think of any methodologies or frameworks that can help us unlock some of the dynamics in this organization?
Yeah, so what came to mind is organizational relationship systems coaching, which the acronym is ORS, and the company is CRR Global. So I'm trained in, I've taken their coursework, and in their methodology, I don't think they really maybe call that. It's like an approach to coaching teams as systems or coaching organizational dynamics. You coach the relationship entity between two or more people. So for example, Marie and Mark have an entity that someone could coach that entity. That Natalie and, you know, the whole company is an entity. The executive team's an entity. Marie's development HR organization is an entity. And so, you know, what came to mind is that framework and some of the tools and other things within that. And yeah, there's a wonderful book which tries to distill a lot of this approach, and it's called Creating Intelligent Teams by Anne Rudd and Marie de Frijon. And yeah, so that, I mean, I can go into more of that if you would like, but that's definitely one of the things that I think about, and it influences how I approach these types of things.
I would be curious to hear more about how you could apply that to for example, Marie and Mark's relationship.
Yeah, so like coaching in general with this, there was also part of the text that said Marie has mandatory coaching with, is it Jacques? Because he's new. And so they have a mandatory coaching session, which is completely inappropriate because she's in the same system coaching a new executive team member who's forced into the coaching. And you invite people to coaching, you never force it on people. It's totally inappropriate. International Coach Federation has like a code of ethics. There's different rules of operation for professional coaching. They're within the same system, and it's always very dicey if someone is doing one-on-one coaching within a system. There's multiple people involved. It's better to coach the entities so you don't have a conflict of interest with the people, especially if you're coaching them as an entity. You don't want to coach them one-on-one. But anyway, so there is some like coaching literacy here. However, like if I was going in and going to work with this company, it would be interesting to see like who would bring me in. Let's say it was Natalie that brought me in. And I didn't, one of the things that I do is an initial scoping or assessment. So I would go and I would do some, if I was doing it the ORSC way, I would do some systems entry. So I would talk with Natalie as the sponsor and meet with the executive team together and talk about how we can engage in a coaching relationship. And I would use a series of tools to help them build their strong team entity together. There's another book called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. You might have heard about it from Patrick Lencioni. He talks about team number one, or the first team concept, and how your executive team can operate as more as, you know, what, like a basketball team, or he uses a sports metaphor where people pass the ball in order to succeed together, as opposed to a golf team where people work individually and maybe have one-on-ones with their manager. So coach that executive team entity for how to work together collaboratively, and to do the systems entry, you do it visibly and together, like in a meeting. There are other entities, and you know, once you align the executive team, the executive team sets the tone across the company. And you know, even like aligning on what does it mean to be an executive in this team? What are our responsibilities? How are we going to communicate in different directions? How do we communicate up? How do we communicate out? How do we communicate with our departments? And what are the roles and responsibilities of the departments? So I think there's like a lot of work to do that could, you could align the executive team, leaders set the tone. And, you know, if we think of Mark, like, what does it mean for Mark to be VP of HR? What does success look like? How does he work with other people on the executive team towards shared goals? Maybe they all determine that, you know, values came up in the text, right? Do the values that Natalie and her co-founder, Richard, who's no longer at the company, do those values still hold? Do they believe in them, right? Natalie gave Marie the task of fixing the culture, right? And so she found these values by accident. But, you know, really like, you know, working with that executive team is a place to start. And then there could be other sub-engagements with others, such as what is the relationship between Mark and Marie? What is their relationship entity like, right? Marie reports to Mark. What does that mean? What does success look like for Marie? How can they work together to be successful? How would they know if their relationship system is healthy or not? Like, what do they, like building that strong foundation of trust and clarity, I think is really, really important.
So would you sit down in a room with Mark and Marie if, when you were to coach their entity? It would be the three of you together?
Yeah. And so, you know, one of the things, so at the executive team level, right? Like the same kind of thing. So you come in and you sit down with the people and you talk about, so we never force coaching on people. We always invite people to coaching. So Natalie would need to buy into this idea that it would be great to have coaching on our team systems. And I would use the language in the book, Creating Intelligent Teams. Mm. And so, yeah. So like for Mark and Marie, let's say that they were like on board with this idea. They would like to be coached, right? Then we would meet and have an initial discovery session. And we would talk about what our coaching engagement could look like, how long it would be, how often we would meet, like the logistics, and also do some education about what it means to be coached in this way, to be coached, to coach their relationship system and kind of what the benefits are to them and what to expect. So you need to kind of educate the people. They need to be interested and willing participants in this. You never want to force anyone into coaching. It's like completely like the wrong thing to do. And yeah, so maybe they would be up for building their relationship and strengthening their connection.
But looking with your experience as a coach, do you think that there's hope for Mark and Marie's relationship?
I do. I think a lot of the times perception is reality. Marie has a perception of Mark, and it's a negative one, but she's starting to see that maybe she's wrong. Like, oh, he had these ideas. Well, maybe he's gotten discouraged. I think, you know, a lot of the times, maybe Marie doesn't have anyone to talk to. She's like talking to people in other companies. She's like getting her impressions, but it seems that, you know, maybe she could benefit from talking to a coach.
Just another quick follow-up question, because you've mentioned a few times this idea of looking at the team as a system. And I was curious to just, if you could elaborate a little bit what that means.
Yeah. So when I talk about the team as a system, I'm talking about the, like the constellation of relationships between the people. And they need to work together in order to accomplish different goals. So it's almost like you have an action or a behavior, even a glance at someone, and it impacts the behavior of the other people. And then they do things or they don't do things, or they, you could see their body language and it impacts you. So we don't operate in isolation. So there's a constellation of people, their relationships together, different artifacts in the system. It could be software that they're building. It could be things like these values as an entity of its own in this system, like some sort of artifact. So it's the social, the relational, the technical, the physical things that are this constellation. And in person, if they're in an office building with different rooms, with different furniture, they've got the refrigerator is a symbol in this system where they were like, we don't have soda, but the other company does, right? Like there's something about that. People are putting post-it notes on the refrigerator with, you know, their voices are not being heard. They are resorting to a post-it note. There's other things, like there's really cool stuff that you could do. Like, I don't know how big the whole system is or like the whole company or whatever, but there's like really cool things that you can facilitate with the entire system. There's one that comes to mind here, which is called Deep Democracy, which is written about in Creating Intelligent Teams and in ORSC, which is a facilitated, like you could call it like an offsite or an onsite. We're all in a room and you use kind of through a series of facilitated instructions, you evoke the different voices in the system. And the goal is to, you know, we always want to try to enable all people to participate and all voices to be heard. And like in here, there's clearly some voices that are crying out on post-it notes on the refrigerator. And so it's kind of like, well, some people are not feeling heard. Like there's things that we can do, I think, to like get this system to, you know, participate more. Now it doesn't mean they need to make all the decisions or that every person gets to decide equally what happens, but you know, there's something about expression and sharing. I also thought too, just with like Marie is a manager, Mark is essentially a manager, like manager training, what does it mean to be a leader or a manager to people, and how do we operate together is not clear in this org.
Hey, what do you make of the whole situation where Mark finds these post-its and collects them and takes them very personally?
Well, so I think that Marie noticed him doing that and saw that. And then she's like, huh, he cares. Like the post-it notes are somebody reacting, you know, quite emotionally about and like saying that, you know, this place is horrible. Like it's not going to be solved by adding soda and refrigerators. Come on, people. But I think he didn't want that to become a thing and like a drama thing among a lot of people. So he took down the post-it notes because, I mean, it's totally unprofessional for one. It's not going to lead to any good things by leaving them there. So he was able to remove them and collect them. And so she saw that. But I think maybe shortly after that, I can't remember exactly, but she was like, you know, maybe he does care. And maybe she wasn't, you know, at some point she's like changing her perception of him. And, you know, I think when there's distance between people and relationships, I mean, Brené Brown says it in her book, Rising Strong, something like in the absence of information, we make up stories. You know, ORSC, the Organizational Relationship Systems Coaching, says that there's a 2% truth to everything. You know, everyone is right partially, but you're also wrong. And you can, right? So it's sort of like, you might have like this fixed mindset over someone, but you know what? You could be wrong. And so, you know, he took those off, and which I think was the right thing to do. And she witnessed something about him, which she didn't maybe notice before.
Yeah, I'm glad we got to talk about the post-it vandal. I wanted to bring that up as well. I thought about how Marie's initial reaction was to like gloat a little bit or like laugh and be like, haha, Mark, kind of, which I also think is not the coolest way to react when you know, she's not very loyal. Like, she could have talked to Mark before or like told him that they were stupid with these bridges.
Yeah, and I'm very happy that you evoke Brené Brown. Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of in the dynamic between Mark and Marie, it sometimes it also feels a little bit like a chicken race. Who is going to break cover first?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it almost seems like she wants his job. She's working around him. And, you know, I wondered about that. Like, she doesn't, obviously she's not confiding it in someone directly here, but I kind of wondered, like, well, okay, you don't have respect for Mark. There's something there that, you know, that's clear. That relationship is very challenged. Natalie, the CEO, Mark's boss, she doesn't seem to maybe respect him. She's going around him to Marie for whatever reason, you know, but it's like, is Mark going to leave or get fired? And then Marie's going to get elevated there. And then Natalie's going to go around her? Probably not. Natalie seems to be going to Marie. And so, you know, that's, you know, what does it mean to be a part of her team, her senior leadership team? There's no clarity there. And right. And it's not to say that I'm not saying that no CEO can ever go to somebody at a different level. It's not that, but it just seems that Mark is not included or there's some disrespect there that feels off.
Have you ever observed behavior like this in an actual organization?
I have observed relationships that have not been very solid or respectful. I think sometimes there's not always instant trust. If people join a company, like I write about this in onboarding, the onboarding chapter of my book, you know, people join a company, they have a need to feel belonging. People that have been there at the company for a long time also need to feel like a sense of rebelonging and that they still belong there. And you know, just really like, you know, leaders set the tone about how people need to interact with each other. I had two different founders that I worked with when I was early in my career would advise me if I had a problem with another person, like clearly Marie has a problem with Mark. Well, I'd go to Marie like, well, why don't you have lunch with Mark? Why don't you like build your relationship? And that was what one founder used to encourage me to do when I had problems with other people, right? Because I did. It's like, what is this guy doing? And he's trying to get me to do his job. And I was upset. But really, it's like, wait a minute. And the other founder would tell me, Heidi, why don't you help him be successful? And that's more of like a founder's mindset. It's like taking the bigger system in mind, the company in mind. Like, how can we work together to succeed and give him the benefit of the doubt? Like, how can you help him level up?
And that's exactly that's what I meant before with the post-its, that she was kind of laughing instead of helping him.
Okay, and see, I missed that part, that. Or I forgot about it. Yeah, it's like, why are they on the same team, like helping the whole cause? It's like, we're not like, you know, against each other.
Exactly. In
the company, we're like, you know, it's like that working together to help this. You know, a cheesy metaphor of like rowing in the same direction, right? You're on a boat and you have these oars and you're all going the same way. It's not who's going to get there faster. You're going together. You're building it together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Can I just ask one quick follow-up question to that? Sorry. It's just because at some point in the story, we learn that, you know, Marie is planning this culture program and she finds out that there actually exists some company values, but they mysteriously disappeared from the introduction presentation. And in this section, she actually learns that Mark was the one to take them out, which I think she suspected, but she also learns that the reason he took them out is because he didn't think that they actually resonate with the way they work in CBRAP. So he didn't want to sit and tell people that this is the culture and then it's nothing like it. And I just wanted to ask you, do you think it's a right thing to do to then remove the values from the presentation, or is there anything else he could have done or should have done?
sounds like he was trying to, I guess protect isn't the right word. That was what was coming to mind. Mm. He was removing them because he senses dissonance between the original values and however it is there today. And so maybe he thought he'd have less problems if he took out the values. He doesn't believe that they're true. I mean, yeah. Clearly there needs to be work on the values at that executive team. And maybe they need to change. Maybe they need to be a little bit different, or maybe they need to have a good discussion there of this was the original intent of the company. Certain amount of time has passed, not sure how much time. And what is the climate that we want to create for the rest of the people in the company? Because we together are the leaders of this group. So we need a strong first team. Yeah, I write about this in my, I have a second book that writes about this concept actually. So they need to like work and align on what this means. Was it right or was it wrong? You know, maybe he thought if I take them out, I'll have less problems than if they're in there. Mm. And he doesn't know, because maybe they haven't talked about the values at the leadership team level at all because they were old, created by the two founders. Doesn't seem like they're really using them.
Mm.
Values, you know, sometimes they're perceived as a little bit cheesy or not so like, oh, it's a corporate thing. But values, when people believe in them and when they use them, they can be very powerful.
Yeah, I agree. I also think it's like the easy way out to just take them out and ignore them. But I think the right thing would be to, as you say, actually leave, like put them back in and then work with them in the leadership team and in the organization.
Yeah.
But thanks.
Yeah. There's work to do there.
I think it's time to start rounding off. And I'm curious, Heidi, what do you think happens next in the story?
So there's probably a few chapters ahead. I think Mark sticks around for a while. I thought maybe he would leave or get fired and then elevate Marie. And then maybe she would have some empathy for Mark and kind of learn, like, you know, he's under a lot of pressure from Natalie. There's probably a lot he doesn't see that that Mark has to deal with. So at first I kind of thought that. My hope is that we continue along the line of Marie thinking about her perception of Mark. Was she wrong? Is he like really good and on her team? And like, how can they work better together? Like, I'm optimistic that they would form a stronger bond and maybe work together. If Marie is going to present to the executive team, she needs to get Mark along for the ride. Like, he can't be learning about it in the executive team meeting. Like, they need to work together. So yeah, maybe they form a closer bond. That's my hope.
And just also before I forget, you talked about a second book. Is this already published or is it coming?
You know, I have a draft of it on LeanPub. Oh. It's currently called Being a Senior Engineering Leader. So I became an engineering VP a couple of years ago. And so I write about that experience and I interviewed 50 VPs and CTOs. So the book is about relationship communication amongst executive teams and their departments, how the communication flows between them, flows up, flows down, flows out. Yeah, so it's called Being a Senior Engineering Leader, but it might change to The People Side of Engineering Leadership is the other working title. So
oh,
this is
cool.
A work in progress. So.
And also another very relevant book for the topics we're discussing today. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about it actually during this. So,
Heidi, as we round off this episode, where could our listeners get in touch with you if they have follow-up questions about anything we've talked about or any of your books?
Yeah. You can find me on LinkedIn, Heidi Helfand. So feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn or send me a message, heidi.helfand@gmail.com. You can reach out to me there. I have a website, heidihelfand.com. So it's pretty much if you type in Heidi Helfand, there's a lot of results that come up. So
great. And I'll put the details of your book and what you just said in the show notes so that you can all find Heidi if you need help.
Sounds great. Yeah, I love working with teams.
Well, Heidi, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was a really nice conversation.
My pleasure.
You're listening to Maneuvering Mondays, a podcast about transforming work culture.
What are your thoughts on Marie's situation? Have you had a similar experience? And what would you have done? Join the conversation on our LinkedIn page and let's maneuver Mondays together.